Today's broadcast was originally recorded on February 6th, 2025.
Seriously, the richest man in the world with countless government contracts, ties to our adversaries, is taking over the Treasury in the name of fighting corruption? The irony is almost as rich as Musk himself.
Oh, I see what Patty Murray did there. Well done, Senator. Keep fighting.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight. I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am. From Pacifica Radio, Los Angeles, this is the broadcast as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA, elsewhere in California, in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI and Round Mountains KKRN, up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's KSO, and Eugene's KEPW, Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU, in Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, Rochester, New York, WRFZ, down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX, Richmond, Virginia's WRWK, Fairmont, West Virginia's WEFR, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM950, KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on the internets and the Progressive Voices Channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Detour Talk, and most of your favorite podcast sites. Blanketing Planet Earth, I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me, from bradblog.com. Now in our 22nd year of troublemaking and muckraking, thanks to folks like you. All right. Hi, Desi Doyen.
Hey.
I got a lot to get to today for a change.
I know.
Attorneys for the now Donald Trump-controlled Justice Department agreed late on Wednesday to temporarily restrict staffers associated with Elon Musk's so-called Department of Governmental Efficiency, or DOGE, from accessing information in the Treasury Department's payment system. How thoughtful. The nation's top law enforcement agency has temporarily agreed to disallow unlawful access to the nation's payment system that writes checks on behalf of the United States for some $6 trillion per year. The agreement, as NBC News reported last night, comes after a group of union members and retirees sued the Treasury Department, alleging that providing DOGE access to the federal government's massive payment and collection system and the personal data housed in it violated federal private laws. Well, that sounds great, but the order would allow for exceptions for two so-called special government employees at the Treasury, Tom Krause and Marco Iles, the 25-year-old Elon Musk employee who had reportedly gained full access to the system and had made, quote, extensive changes to the system's computer code. As per this agreement, however, the Doge bros would supposedly be permitted access, quote, as needed to perform their duties. What duties? No one seems to actually know for sure beyond the fact that they are, quote, special government employees, which, by the way, reminds me of Vladimir Putin's special military operation in Ukraine. But Musk's bros would only be allowed access to perform their duties, quote, provided that such access to payment records will be read only. I don't know. You figure it out. We are in just about as lawless territory as I have ever seen in the U.S. The restricted access, whatever it is, however restricted it actually is, will remain in effect pending a subsequent hearing on the lawsuit, according to NBC. The suit contends newly minted Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent should not have given Doge access to the secure system at all. Bessent, quote, decided behind closed doors to allow individuals not involved in the processing of the government's financial transactions to root around in the Bureau's records. Giving access to those records is unlawful, the filing alleges. Here was Senator Patty Murray, Democrat from Washington State, in a floor speech on Wednesday.
Let's not mince words here. An unelected, unaccountable billionaire with expansive conflicts of interest, deep ties to China, and an indiscreet axe to grind against perceived enemies is hijacking our nation's most sensitive financial data system and its checkbook so that he can illegally block funds to our constituents based on a slightest whim or wildest conspiracy. Funds, mind you, that Congress, on a bipartisan basis, passed.
In the meantime, as 4 million payments per day for things like Social Security and veterans benefits, Medicare payments, tax refund checks hang in the balance of the Doge Bros access, now over at Treasury, David Dayen of the American Prospect cautioned on Wednesday that while the White House claims to have rescinded an Office of Management and Budget memo issued last week, freezing virtually all government grants and spending to literally thousands of entities in all 50 states, in fact, the spending freeze actually continues at a whole bunch of agencies. And, of course, it does so unlawfully. Quote, the funding pause remains in effect, at least for some recipients. That, according to a written order by D.C. District Court Judge Lauren Ali Khan, despite OMB's rescission of the memo, destroying the paper trail of allegedly illegal activity means nothing if the activity persists, the judge wrote. Dayen sees two conclusions to be drawn here. One, when you set something in motion in the federal government, it's nearly impossible to roll it back quickly. And the second, he notes, the second inescapable conclusion is that an active impoundment of federal spending is happening across several nodes of government. In many cases, agencies are deriving separate authority than the supposedly rescinded OMB memo from executive orders, for example. This is no less unconstitutional, he argues. You can't just stop payments approved by Congress because the president doesn't like the recipient. Well, apparently you can now, or at least who's going to stop him? And that's not all from David on Wednesday. He also reports that all work and, yes, spending at agencies like the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, the only federal agency designed to look out for the interests of actual consumers, which is why Republicans hate it, and not only because it was originally created by Elizabeth Warren during the Obama administration before she became a senator, but he notes that work at agencies like the CFPB have been entirely shut down right now, indefinitely, and as Dayen convincingly argues, unlawfully. Joining us now is our friend David Dayen, the widely published investigative financial journalist and executive editor of the American Prospect. He is also a Sidney Hillman Prize winner for magazine journalism and the author of several books, including his latest, Monopolized Life in the Age of Corporate Power. Hey, David, welcome back, amigo.
Hi, how you doing?
Oh, fantastic. Everything's great. I hope you are as well. Listen, I was first drawn to your coverage of what looks to be this a de facto and seemingly unlawful shutdown by the Trump administration of the CFPB, because it's a small but important agency. But, you know, like many others, it is not getting the coverage as Trump and Musk and the Doge Bros ransack things like the U.S. Treasury. So I want to get to the CFPB in a moment. But you also note that above and beyond the pretty wide covered invasion of Treasury and their payment system, the brazen shutdown of USAID and the supposed rescission of the government-wide memo ordering almost all federal spending to stop, that the spending still is stopped in many places. You cite, for example, a bunch of nonprofits and NGOs who rely on government grants for day-to-day operations. Tell me about this. You cite one nonprofit in West Virginia as an example with just five employees and how their operations are already ground to a halt at the moment.
Yeah, so I think we can look at this on two separate lines. The first is the entities, nonprofits that were initially denied spending in the OMB order, in that memo that was then rescinded, that still haven't, for whatever reason, gotten payments restarted. And that includes the West Virginia concern that you're talking about. Is it's through the Center for Independent Living. They you know, help people with disabilities get to the doctor or live on their own, things like that. And they have five employees and now they're down to two. And that's just from missing payments for a few days. Because the way that the federal government works is that when they make a grant to these kinds of nonprofit entities, they don't just give them all the money for the year. They dribble it out. And basically, if you have a rent bill to pay or payment, you know, payroll to make, you ping the system and say, give me, you know, the money, the portion of the grant that you've given me, give me that now, you know, give me, let me draw down those funds. And the government then cuts the check. And so just a few days of that being off means you might miss your rent. Or you might miss payroll, or and you have to make those really hard decisions. And that's what that particular agency has done. And we're finding that even a week later, a week after the first restraining order on this broad pause on grants and loans by the Office of Management and Budget, that there are entities, Head Start entities, and many others who still aren't getting their money. So as this goes from a day to 2 days to 3 days to a week, the hazards from that, the implications of that, the consequences get bigger and bigger and bigger. So that's sort of part one. We can talk about part two.
Well, let me just jump in here to say that when we're talking about organizations like this, this five-person organization that's helping people to, you know, helping elderly to get meals and get to appointments and so forth, isn't that, you know, sort of, Republicans for years have wanted to privatize essentially everything. So it's not a government program. These are non-governmental organizations who are doing this work that the government could be doing, but you know, it's sort of been pawned off to these groups to handle. That seems like exactly what Republicans have wanted in programs like this for years. No?
Well, I mean, but if you take it one step further, what they really want to do is not spend federal dollars on any
at
of
all.
That.
Okay.
And so the point of the pause, if there was a point, was to, you know, rid the nation of wokeness or whatever. I mean, you know, there are all these sort of reasons that OMB came up with, basically saying you got to comply with these executive orders, and we have to pause everything in order to ensure compliance. And now when they switch the light back on, these some of these entities aren't able to access these funds still. And so that's sort of one half of this. The second half of it is there are certain executive orders that just said, well, these specific programs have to go, and at the agency level, not at the OMB level, at the agency level, they are blocking that funding. So an example is sort of at the EPA, where or the Department of Energy, where there was an executive order that said, I believe it was entitled "Terminating the Green New Deal." There is no Green New Deal, but that's what this said.
Right.
And but what it meant is that all the renewable programs in the Inflation Reduction Act and in the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act needed to be paused on their disbursement, and that is illegal. I mean, under the Constitution, which says Congress has the power of the purse, and under the Impoundment Control Act of 1974, which sets very strict limits when a president wants to delay or rescind funding from a program that was duly passed by Congress. That is all legal, and court precedent backs that up. But separate from the OMB memo, which just said, we're going to broadly pause everything to see if it conflicts, they're saying oh, the executive order allows the agency to just stop this particular funding. And that is not lawful. It hasn't really been challenged yet. The claim is that these are mere programmatic delays, that you have a 45-day window where you can delay some of this funding. But you're not supposed to do it just because the program is something you don't like as the president. There are very strict ways in which you can delay funding as the executive branch. And so I suspect that there are going to be further lawsuits by clean energy groups, by foreign aid beneficiaries, because those foreign aid grants have mostly been paused right now,
right?
To attack that those particular alleged authorities that the president gave to pause those disbursements,
and farmers, agricultural groups that are cut off because of the
well, because of USAID.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Should and a great example of how everything is sort of stopped is the CFPB, and I'm going to get there in the moment. But do you rest any easier with the reporting over the past 24 hours that the DOJ has agreed in a lawsuit that their access, the Doge boys' access, will be restricted to only, quote, as needed to perform their, quote, duties with only, quote, read-only access to the system? Do you feel any better about that after hearing that reporting, David? Why?
I don't.
Why?
Because, I'm sorry, but I think there's a lot of fun with words being played.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of kind of ways to hide what's really going on.
Mm-hmm.
So there's read access on the read and write access on the data.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, the actual grantees, the actual this individual gets this payment.
Right.
That's data, right?
Right.
And then there's read write access on the code. And the code is sort of the plumbing of, if you see this payment, then you pay it. And if you see this payment from this agency, then you pay it. And if you see this marking, then you do whatever. I think that Treasury is talking about the data when they're saying we'll agree to you know, restrict access.
Right.
And they're not talking about the code.
Right. That was my sense as well. They are in the system. And, you know, as Josh Marshall reported over TPM and Wired reported, they appear to already have extensively rewritten some of the code that runs this entire massive system. That's how I read it.
Yeah, I think that is accurate. And we still don't know the extent to which they have done anything malicious or harmful yet, but we do now have reporting that they did attempt to basically do what everybody who's been watching this, that it was their worst fear. And so CNN, New York Times, and others have reported that within 4 days of the inauguration, the Doge team tried to, at the Treasury level, pause all grants from to USAID, you know, that went through USAID.
Yeah.
And this is the worst case scenario. So that if you have control of the plumbing, the system that actually makes the payments, and you put in a prompt that says, you know, this, if it comes from this agency, don't pay it.
Right.
That is basically taking over the authority of the agency. It's taking over the authority of Congress, and it's turning the country into essentially a dictatorial state where one man and one man alone, whether that man is the president or whether that man is the richest man in the world, has the authority to allow or disallow payments that were passed by an entire other mechanism in Congress and agreed to by an entire other mechanism in a federal agency. So that is really disastrous. And, you know, that wasn't, and that ended up not being done, but the person who denied that access Stephen Lebrick, this high-ranking official at Treasury, mm-hmm. was ultimately forced out. And so who knows what they're doing in terms of the payment system right now.
Yeah, we don't know. And this was something that, you know, when it was announced that, Elon Musk and at the time Vivek Ramaswamy were going to be running this Doge thing and cutting all sorts of government spending, I thought to myself, well, they have no authority to do that. They can't do that. They can make recommendations, you know, for it to be done by to Congress and so forth, but they can't just do that. They were acting like they could do that. And apparently this seems to be the plan. They were just going to go in there and just stop the payments, as far as I could tell.
And, you know, I mean, if you want to sort of say something positive, it's that all of the attention on this has, you know, slowed their roll a little bit. I think we can say that, that's not to say that there's any sigh of relief to be breathed here, but I do think that there's a big spotlight on this particular aspect of the system and that this thing that they're going after. And so, you know, whereas if it was happening sort of all in the shadows, mm-hmm. they wouldn't have to be as careful about it. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know if that's heartening to you or not, but
it's important. The more light on all of these things, the better. But that said, you're right. There's stuff going on in the shadows where we count on you, David Dayan, to shine the light. One of those is exactly the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, which is a tiny bureau. Most people have no idea what it is, the CFPB. There is sort of, you note in your report, there's sort of a normal period of pause in action that can take place at federal agencies when there's a transition of power from, you know, one administration to the next. But that what is happening at the CFPB, you argue, is actually not normal, is actually a takeover. And you note a couple big red, pretty big red flags as you describe it. One being Trump's newly minted Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent being named to also take over as the acting director of the CFPB for the moment. Why is that a big red flag as you see it?
Well, it's a red flag because of what Bessent has shown himself to be, particularly through what we were just talking about, because it was Bessent who granted the access to the Doge team to the payment system.
And Treasury,
At Treasury, at the Bureau of Fiscal Service. And it's also him who forced out Stephen Lebrick, who was trying to provide some resistance to that. Hmm. So that's the red flag. I mean, 8 years ago, Trump did the same thing. He didn't actually fire the CFPB director in 2017 because he didn't have a Supreme Court ruling in hand that said that the president is allowed to fire the director at will. Mm-hmm. That ruling came in 2020. In fact, Joe Biden fired Trump's CFPB director on day one. Mm. So that's allowed, essentially, at this point. But when the CFPB director left in late 2017, Trump replaced him with his OMB director, mm-hmm. Mick Mulvaney. Mm-hmm. And there was a big fight over that because others at the Bureau thought that there was actually a line of succession and the deputy director had the right to take over the agency at that point. And that fight played out in the courts and ultimately Trump won. Mm-hmm. And so he has the authority to put somebody in place who's already been Senate confirmed. And Bessent just got his Senate confirmation last week. So he's allowed to do that, but it's about who Bessent is. He's shown himself to be unbelievably loyal to whatever it is Trump wants and willing to, you know, basically do his bidding no matter what. So that's what is the one red flag. And then the second thing, of course, is that the agency is essentially shut down right now. The first thing Bessent did is said, put a pause on all litigation, all enforcement, all rulemaking, and even all public communications. And so they've basically turned the agency into a ghost town. I've actually talked to people who work there and I said, what are you doing right now? And they've said, well, you know, we can supervise, but we can't come to any conclusions. We can prepare reports. We just can't release them. So, you know, they're doing essentially some busy work there. Nothing that can actually protect consumers in real time. But so and it's indefinite when this will be lifted. Bessent just said we're going to pause this while we, you know, figure out whether this is in line with the president's wishes or whatever. It's indeterminate when that's going to start again. So throughout this time, consumers are essentially not protected. There's a consumer complaint database at CFPB, and I don't think that's been taken down, but I don't know what happens if you make a complaint. I don't think anything happens.
So what you're suggesting is that, in essence, can't they just say, okay, we're going to pause all activity as they do, you know, between administrations sometimes, but then just not unpause things? Can they just keep it frozen, essentially, for the next 4 years if they want?
That's an unanswered question. I think that there would be some pushback to that, but whether that would be fruitful is a bit unclear. You know, a very similar thing has happened at the National Labor Relations Board.
Yes.
Where one of the commissioners, one of the members of the board, mm-hmm. Gwen Wilcox, was fired. She believes unlawfully, and she's actually suing to yep. protest that firing. Mm-hmm. But at the time being, there are two members of the NLRB. That's supposed to be a 5-member panel. And based on past precedent, that means that the NLRB doesn't have a quorum. And if it doesn't have a quorum, it can't hear or decide any cases.
Yep.
And so what this is the equivalent of is there's no appeals court, because there are lower, there are administrative law judges, and there are regional NLRBs, and they can make decisions, but there's no appeals court. However, companies can still appeal. Right. Mm. So if there's a union election and the union wins and the company says, well, no, there was a problem with the election, we are appealing it to the NLRB. Well, that then just stalls because you can't get a decision from the NLRB right now.
Everything remains under appeal for as long
yes,
as
everything remains yeah. under appeal indefinitely.
Wow.
Once again, similar to if a individual was fired for union activity and they file a grievance with the NLRB, they can't get an answer on that as long as it's appealed up the chain. So it's a free pass for companies who don't want any consequences for union busting behavior to just continue to do it, appeal everything into a netherworld that kind of half exists and half doesn't right
now. And that netherworld is also, as you noted, similar to the one at the CFPB, which yeah. There's a number of active litigations and enforcement actions underway that seem to yeah. be pretty huge, by the way, that are apparently now stalled in their tracks while everything is just on mystery hold for whenever.
That's basically the case. The lawyers for CFPB in active litigation have been told, ask your judge for a continuance on these cases. In other words, ask for an extension of whatever deadline it is. If you have to file a brief or if there's a hearing, just ask for a continuance. Just extend and pretend. Just extend it out. And so that's where we're at right now. And the sad thing is these are almost more of the legal things that the administration's doing. I mean, there is a precedent with CFPB where they did put a pause initially in 2017. And then they took the pause off. But what we've seen is Trump term one and Trump term two are very different and maybe got into some MAGA type's head. What if we just pause this for 4 years? What if we just don't ever add any members to the National Labor Relations Board? What if we just put the large parts of the government on ice?
And this, you note, the agency CFPB here had just sued the nation's biggest banks in December over failing to counter fraud on their payment app, Zelle. The same month, CFPB sued Walmart for opening bank accounts for their own delivery drivers with exorbitant junk fees that cost the drivers at least $10 million.
Mm-hmm.
Four
mm-hmm.
days before Trump's inauguration, CFPB fined the Cash App $175 million, including $120 million that goes directly to harmed customers over responding to fraud allegations with, quote, intentionally shoddy investigations and customer service. All of that is on hold at the one federal agency, right, that looks out for consumer interests in these business disputes.
And the reason why I picked those specific examples is those examples involve payment apps. Mm-hmm. Those involve, you know, kind of things that people use to send money back and forth. Mm-hmm. Well, what company is coming up with a way for people to send money back and forth? That would be X.
What?
X has signed a deal with Visa to be sort of the backbone of that, of creating a Zelle type, a Venmo type app where there could be peer-to-peer payments moving back and forth.
Uh-huh.
So Elon Musk, the special government employee that he is, has a real interest in not having the CFPB as a cop on the beat as X gets into financial services, as it gets into payments.
Right.
And indeed, Musk, I think it was, I don't know if it was before the election or right after the election, used the phrase, delete CFPB.
Yep.
And people were wondering why he did so. Well, his company is about to become a financial services provider. That's why.
Unbelievable. Just amazing. Thank you for shining a light on this. Like you say, there's a whole bunch of other things going on that are being paused here by all of this.
Oh, we could talk for weeks attention. Here,
we really
Brad.
Oh, and we will. How about years, David? We will be calling you soon. David Dayen, the executive director of the American Prospect, the 2021 Sidney Hillman Prize winner for magazine journalism, author of Monopolized Life in the Age of Corporate Power, and now the host of his own podcast with Matt Stoller called Organized Money, a podcast about how the business world really works and how corporate consolidation and monopolies are dominating every sector of our economy. And I suspect now more than ever. You can find David's work at prospect.org and on the blue skies at ddayen. Really appreciate your time today, David. We will talk soon.
All right. Thanks a lot, Brad.
Thanks, man. All right, so all of that is bad enough. And yeah, American consumers will be affected by the shutdown at CFPB because apparently allowing them to be ripped off by huge multinational corporations like the ones that Musk owns is exactly what MAGA was hoping for, I guess, when they decided to goose step behind Trump and Musk's pretend scheme to supposedly root out government corruption and make it more efficient. Sure.
You mean make government corruption more efficient.
Yeah, there you go. So the Doge bros are going to cost the MAGA folks money with the shutdowns at CFPB and at the National Labor Relations Board, by the way, and much more. And, of course, there's the money that we're all already shelling out. There you go. For the price of eggs. See what I did there? That is skyrocketing amid a bird flu epidemic, despite Trump's repeated campaign vows that he was going to lower the cost of eggs. But keeping an eye on that deadly flu epidemic is now more difficult than ever in recent days, thanks to Trump's shutdown of operations and communications at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and the National Institutes of Health and even the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Some of that alarming if underreported news and Desi Doyen's latest Green News report as the Doge bros, to quote Donald Trump, move like a bitch on your currently free weather reports from the National Weather Service. All of that is straight ahead on today's broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman.
The broadcast and the Green News Report are 100% independent, 100% listener-supported. But we can't do it alone. We need you. Please help us bring real facts to listeners at independent stations around the nation. Please drop by bradblog.com/donate. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Hey, this is Brad. You're listening to an encore presentation of the broadcast. Welcome back. It's the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. I will get to the bird flu stuff in a moment, but here's some Should we call this fun breaking news? That's doing. We were talking about this this guy, Marco Iles, this 25-year-old kid who was worked for Elon Musk, who was given access to the code base of the U.S. Treasury payment system. Well, some breaking news on him from the Wall Street Journal. A staffer for Elon Musk's Department of Government Efficiency, whose access to U.S. Treasury payment systems was approved and or restricted, who knows, by a federal judge on Thursday, has links to a deleted social media account that advocated for racism and eugenics. Well, knock me over with a feather. The 25-year-old employee, Marco Iles, we mentioned him earlier. We described him in more detail on yesterday's show. He has apparently now resigned after the Wall Street Journal asked the White House about his connection to this account. The now deleted profile associated with Iles, who Musk and Trump embedded in the Treasury Department's computer payment system for some $6 trillion in payments on behalf of the U.S. each year, advocated repealing the Civil Rights Act and backed a, quote, eugenic immigration policy, unquote, in the weeks right before Trump was inaugurated.
Classy.
So this wasn't a long time ago when he was, you know, he was a kid. He's a kid now. He's only 25. But he said, quote, these are some of his things on this account, quote, you could not pay me to marry outside of my ethnicity. That was on Twitter back in September. Quote, normalize Indian hate, the account wrote in reference to a post noting the prevalence of people from India in Silicon Valley. Vivek Ramaswamy left the Doge group for some reason, didn't he? Mm-hmm. I don't know why. After the Journal inquired about the account, White House spokesperson Carolyn Leavitt said that Iles had resigned from his role. Despite all of that, or perhaps because of it, Iles went on to work for Musk at SpaceX, Starlink, and X. The account was deleted in December, but hundreds of sometimes sophomoric posts have been archived. Quote, just for the record, I was racist before it was cool. The account posted in July of last year. In June, the user weighed in on the conflict in the Middle East, writing, quote, I would not mind at all if Gaza and Israel were both wiped off the face of the earth. Sounds like a great guy.
Real charmer.
Nice to have him in access to the code that pays $6 trillion a year for the U.S. Treasury. Well, not anymore.
Yeah.
He's gone. All right. In some other important news affected by the madness of Donald Trump, which does not seem to be getting the coverage that may be warranted here, I'm hopeful that coverage of Trump's shutdown of the United States Agency for International Development, or USAID, has drawn attention to the fact that the administration has shut down dead in its tracks a whole bunch of critical programs supported by USAID that are helping to track and stamp out infectious disease outbreaks around the globe, including polio, measles, an apparently antibiotic-resistant strain of tuberculosis in children, and an Ebola outbreak in Uganda, among others, which, along with treatment of some 20 million in Africa with the HIV/AIDS virus, USAID has been tracking and distributing medication for, but which has now reportedly been stopped dead in its tracks with Trump's illegal shutdown of the federal agency created by an act of Congress, and thus it can only be shut down legally by another act of Congress. I'm hoping that all of that has brought attention to what USAID does around the world. All of that helping to prevent those disease outbreaks from worsening and, yes, coming here to the United States. Fight it over there so we don't have to fight it here. But in the meantime, right here at home, as you may have heard, tens of millions of chickens have now been killed to try and limit transmission of the H5N1 bird flu, or avian flu, avian virus, that has been covered it appears to now be wreaking havoc on the nation's supply of eggs. You probably heard about that part. But the latest development, as the LA Times reports today here in California, is that a newly discovered deadly strain of bird flu is infecting dairy cows right now in neighboring Nevada. This one, dubbed D11, this version of the virus has already killed one person in Louisiana, severely sickened a teen in Canada who almost died, and has been causing major die-offs of wild birds in some eastern states. So this could be passed around from flock to flock, from cattle to cattle, by wild birds. Quote, finding D11 in dairy cows caught investigators off guard, said LA Times' Susan Rust, but it also is just the latest surprise as the H5N1 bird flu continues to flummox researchers and public officials. She describes it as, quote, a stark reminder that this virus does not behave like a typical flu virus. John Corsland, a former USDA scientist, did not mince words, explaining, quote, this is truly a blank show unfolding into a nightmare scenario. He said, we have no idea how widespread this version of the virus already is in cattle herds. Every time poultry flocks break with virus, we'll need to investigate cattle contacts, which are many, as well as wild bird and other poultry contacts. Researchers are said to be facing questions as they try to understand the virus's impacts, including how it could affect the dairy industry, other livestock animals, and humans, and the likelihood of more spillover from wild birds into cattle. Now, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, has now recorded 67 human infections and one death through January, although it's difficult to know how up-to-date that information actually now is, given that the CDC has been forced to freeze much of its work by the new administration. In fact, the page that I looked at reporting the avian flu numbers now says at the top, quote, CDC's website is being modified to comply with President Trump's executive orders. What that means exactly is unclear. They don't specify. But this particular virus is not waiting for clarification of Trump's big government takeover and freeze of critical research and news about infectious diseases. What we do know is that more than half of human cases reported so far were, hey, here in California, and all but two of them were dairy workers. Although there are no confirmed person-to-person infections so far, reporting on previous research in December before Trump took over the CDC and the NIH, that research indicates that the strain currently affecting dairy cows is now just one mutation away from becoming easily transmitted between humans. Since I know some of you needed some more good news this week. At the end of the week, just before Trump took office and froze everything, data from the USDA, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, this page has a note saying, a quote, last modified January 16, 2025. So again, just before Trump took office, it shows 38 new cases confirmed of H5N1 infections among cows at dairy facilities in California just over the past 30 days. More than 730 cases in total during the outbreak. So California represents nearly 77% of cases nationwide. We're number one. But even that number is hard to make sense of, given that the USDA's, quote, situational update map on this, said to be updated daily, is on a page that says it was last modified on January 16. So who knows? Now, maybe it's just me, but given what happened the last time this guy was in office, and we found ourselves by the end, in a worldwide pandemic that crashed the economy, shut down the world, and killed millions across the globe, including more than a million here in the U.S., well, it might be nice to have a bit more clarity on this kind of thing at this moment, beyond the fact that, yes, it has increased the price of eggs. More than 100 commercial chicken farms in California have now experienced infections. That affects more than 23 million birds, according to however reliable and up-to-date the current USDA data is. Nationwide, nearly 30 million birds have been affected and presumably killed. In December, Governor Gavin Newsom declared a state of emergency here in California amid the rising cases, quote, to ensure government agencies have the resources and flexibility they need to respond quickly to this outbreak. That's California. Who's looking out for the rest of the nation? Doesn't seem to be the CDC or the USDA or the National Institutes of Health. Maybe it is. Maybe it isn't. I don't know. I can't figure it out from the mess that is now their websites, thanks to Donald Trump shutting down all communications from these groups. Shortly after he retook office and was sworn in, Trump shut down the Biden-era White House Office of Pandemic Preparedness. You may recall he did the same thing when he took office the first time, shutting down Obama's Office of Pandemic Preparedness. But who would ever need such an office anyway, right? He has ordered federal health agencies to, quote, pause all public communications, has halted studies that CDC researchers had planned to release pertaining to, you guessed it, bird flu. Infectious disease experts are concerned that the administration's actions will hamper the government's ability to provide timely information about the spread of the virus here in the U.S., which is currently ground zero, apparently, for H5N1 and all of its variants. Quote, more cases of H5N1 are occurring in the U.S. than in any other country, according to Jennifer Nuzzo, the director of the Pandemic Center at Brown University in Rhode Island. She says, pausing our health communications at a time when states are scrambling to contain this virus is dangerously misguided. This, she says, will make America less healthy and will worsen the virus's economic tolls. Experts also say the new administration's move could lead to economic and social isolation for many Americans. Other nations may begin to question the health and safety of exported agriculture products like dairy, livestock, poultry, and meat, as well as the health of Americans who want to travel internationally. Other nations may say, yeah, you're not welcome. We don't want your agricultural goods, and we don't want you either. Quote, I can foresee countries slapping travel and trade restrictions on the U.S. It'll affect millions of Americans, said Lawrence Gostin, a legal scholar at Georgetown University. Nuzzo of the Brown University researcher said, quote, the Trump administration will have no choice about acting on H5N1. The virus is continuing to sicken people and livestock and is driving up our grocery bills, she said. The question is not whether the Trump administration will act to combat H5N1, but when and how many lives and livelihoods will be harmed before they act. But of course, don't worry. Looks like Republicans have decided they will, in fact, confirm Robert F. Kennedy Jr. to become the next Secretary of Health and Human Services, overseeing the CDC, the NIH, Centers for Medicare and Medicaid. So I'm sure it will all be fine. Why worry? And if you don't know the answer to that question, grab yourselves a Sharpie pen to take some notes, because Desi Doyen joins us for our latest Green News Report. Next, I'm Brad Friedman, and this is The Bradcast. Hey, this is Brad. Here at The Bradcast and bradblog.com, we fight for election integrity all year around, like no other media outlet in the nation. But of course, we need your help to help us remain on your public airwaves by stopping by bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
You're listening to an encore presentation of The Bradcast.
Okay, I got a little listener mail I want to share with you at the end of the show here today. So let's get straight to it. Our latest Green News Report.
From Project 2025, and I'll quote, NOAA should be dismantled.
Elon Musk's Doge bros descend on NOAA. monarch butterfly population hits a new low. Plus, new study finds global warming is increasing rat populations.
All of those rats and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
We really should do away with the Gen Alpha, Gen Beta stuff and call them what they are. Gen Future Soldiers for the Water Wars. Right?
Right. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, I guess we could have predicted it, but Elon Musk Doge boys are now descending on the National Weather Service?
Oh, yes, they are.
Okay.
And it's even worse than that.
Oh, great.
Donald Trump has nominated meteorologist Neil Jacobs to lead NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration that oversees the National Weather Service. NOAA is one of the world's top climate science agencies. Now, remember back in 2019 when Trump used a Sharpie to alter the projected path of a hurricane?
I remember it well.
Falsely claim the storm would hit Alabama?
Yes.
Well, Jacobs back then was the guy who put out a statement justifying the Sharpiegate lie. Jacobs was later found to have violated NOAA's scientific integrity policies.
And so now we're putting him in charge of NOAA.
Exactly. And moreover, Wired reports that Elon Musk's Doge staffers have now descended on NOAA, infiltrating its headquarters, and at least one non-scientist has been given power to edit documents concerning the agency's climate science work.
They were seen carrying a case of black Sharpie pens.
The right-wing manifesto Project 2025 calls for NOAA to be dismantled and divisions like the National Weather Service to be privatized. Corporations have long targeted NOAA. They want the agency to withhold its publicly funded data from the public so that they can profit by making Americans pay for their now free weather forecasts and climate research. However, Howard Lutnick, Trump's nominee for Commerce Secretary, who would oversee NOAA, said in his Senate confirmation hearing recently that he would maintain NOAA and the National Weather Service. Here he is with Democratic Senator Brian Schatz of Hawaii.
From Project 2025, and I'll quote, NOAA should be dismantled and many of its functions eliminated, sent to other agencies, privatized, or placed under the control of states and territories. Do you agree with that?
No.
Well, I wish it mattered what Howard Lutnick has to say.
Here he is with Senator Amy Klobuchar, Democrat of Minnesota.
One last thing. National Weather Service, part of NOAA. Will you work to maintain the National Weather Service? Very key in my state.
I will. I think we can deliver the product more efficiently and less expensively, dramatically less expensively, but the outcome of delivering those services should not be changed.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Why do I have a feeling that I don't believe this guy in the least?
Elsewhere, Trump's Department of Energy has issued a stop work order on all projects funded by the department that address environmental justice, even projects that are currently under contract. The move follows Trump's executive order ending programs tied to diversity, equity, and inclusion, and it targets a key part of former President Biden's environmental justice legacy in assisting frontline and minority communities in dealing with pollution.
Well, that needs to be destroyed.
Heatmap reports that key federal agencies have also stopped all work on renewable energy, including projects on private lands, halting final permits for renewable energy projects, and also work in government offices that are responsible for wetlands and species protection. That likely includes the Biden administration's efforts to place the iconic monarch butterfly under Endangered Species Act protection. In California this week, researchers said the tally of Western monarch butterflies has dropped to its lowest level in 30 years, hammered by pesticides, habitat loss, and climate change. In other news, in yet another major setback for the U.S. offshore wind energy sector, oil and gas giant Shell announced it is walking away from a major project off the coast of New Jersey. And finally, rat populations are spiking in major cities.
And not just in Washington, D.C.
That's thanks to warming temperatures due to climate change and other human activities, according to a new study in the journal Science Advances. The researchers found that cities with more dense human populations and more urbanization means an increase in humans discarding trash, and warming winter temperatures from the burning of coal, oil, and natural gas extend the rat's ability to forage in winter and squeeze out additional reproductive cycles.
No wonder rats are in favor of climate change. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find, follow, and share us on the social medias, particularly at Blue Sky, at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
It's a rat race. You know it's me. Yes, it is.
Oh, it is a rat race. Thank you very much, Desiree. Quickly, a comment left, I think, today at bradblog.com from Leanne. She writes, Brad and Green News Lady, I just donated money to your show because I love your courageous commentary. I listen to your show on the internet every day and feel so inspired by you and all the guests that you have on your show.
Oh,
I love the addition of Driftglass and Heather Digby to your show and feel they are a real asset. I just want you to know that I support your show by listening and donating to it financially. Thank you for all you do. Well, thank you, Leanne.
Yes.
Your encouraging words and, of course, your donation are all greatly appreciated right now. So thank you for both. I mostly wanted to share that as a good reminder that the broadcast is, yes, 100% listener supported by folks like Leanne. So thank you, Leanne, and folks like you. And also, because she called Desi Doyen, Green News Lady.
Thank you, Leanne.
Which I love.
I do too.
And I think it's hysterical. So thanks again to my guest today, David Dayen of the American Prospect, and to our producer, Green News Lady. And, of course, to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's show, you can download it anytime for free at bradblog.com. That, yes, is made possible by support from folks like you and Leanne, who stopped by bradblog.com/donate to help us stay on your public airwaves. Drop me an email if you like. I am bradcast@bradblog.com. I am also on the social medias, especially Blue Sky, where you will find me at The Brad Blog. We will see you there. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
I'm gonna win.